I'd like to call to order the regular session of the Berlin Mayor and Council for Monday, June 26, 2017. As has been our tradition for many, many years, I'd like to invite everyone tonight to join the Mayor and Council in reciting the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Would you please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item on the agenda is the approval of the executive session minutes of June 12th.
Motion to approve.
We have a motion by Councilmember Boyas to approve. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Minutes show that the motion passed unanimously and that all council members are present. Next is the statement of closure of the executive session. The reason under the Maryland Open Meetings Law was to consult with our council to obtain legal advice on a legal matter. Now, item 1C is the approval of the regular session minutes of June 12th.
Two changes, Mayor. Okay. On page 3 of 5, number 8, I guess about the fourth sentence up from the bottom, we have playground. Playground's in there twice, just strike one.
Okay.
And then on page 4 of 5, second sentence down, Ms. Salee said if she could have it by March. I believe we meant put in there they could have it until March.
Okay.
For that one. Other than those two changes noted, motion to approve.
Okay. Is there, are those noted?
Yeah.
Thank you. All right, we have a motion by Councilmember Boyas to approve the regular session minutes with those two corrections. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Next is the number 2 on our agenda, is Atlantic General Hospital Conduit Financing. And I know we briefly talked about it in previous meetings. So.
Yep, our bond counsel, Lindsay Regard's here.
Great. Come on down. Introduce yourself for the record and kind of give an overview, not just for the council, but also for the public.
Absolutely. Lindsay Rader, Funk & Bolton, Baltimore, Maryland. I've served for a number of years as bond counsel to the town. In this particular transaction, I would be serving the role of issuer's counsel. It is very common in a conduit revenue financing for the borrower to bring their own counsel to the table who actually gives the bond counsel opinion and the tax opinion. But in a case like that, it is very much recommended that the issuer have its own counsel to look out for your interests, particularly in things such as making sure that the borrower provides satisfactory indemnification to the town, that the documents make it very clear that the conduit bonds are in no way, shape, or form a pecuniary obligation of the town, and that it's very clear that you are not pledging your full faith and credit or unlimited taxing power to payment of these bonds. So these conduit revenue bonds have been requested by Atlantic General Hospital. Under the Maryland Economic Development Revenue Bond Act, a facility applicant or facility user may request that a municipal corporation provide financing in one of several ways. The most common ways is by issuing bonds and making a loan to the borrower. Because Atlantic General Hospital is a 501c3 organization and it anticipates that the bonds will be tax exempt if you approve the bond issue, for tax code, federal tax code purposes, we have to hold the public hearing tonight, which is known as a TEFRA hearing. A notice of that was published in the Ocean City Digest on June 9th, and it gave a basic overview of what's to be financed and the time and the place. So, in accordance with the Economic Development Revenue Bond Act, Atlanta General Hospital submitted a letter of intent dated June 9th, it's Exhibit A to the resolution, to the town, asking the town to provide this bond financing. The proceeds of the bonds will be used to refinance the acquisition of some land and construction of an approximately 17,500-square-foot building that will be located at 9707 Healthway Drive. Some additional improvements at 9733 Healthway Drive, which include recabling, call and alert systems, improvements to Suite 103 of the James G. Barrett Medical Building located at 10231 Old Ocean City Boulevard, other improvements related to any of the foregoing, and including refinancing portions, all or a portion of a mortgage loan that Atlantic General Hospital incurred in 2014. Bond proceeds may also be used to fund reserves, fund capitalized interest on the bonds, and fund issuance costs. The maximum amount of bond funding requested is not to exceed $10 million. Bonds may be issued in one or more series from time to time. As I noted before, the expectation is that these bonds will be tax exempt for federal income tax purposes, and the resolution provides that to the extent any series is found to be tax exempt, that the mayor and/or the town administrator and/or the finance director may sign certain tax documents, and the town includes covenants not to violate the tax code to the extent it exercises control or direction with respect to the bond proceeds. And quite frankly, in a transaction like this, you don't end up exercising control or direction, because on the day the bonds are issued, the proceeds will be either deposited with a trustee, or AGH will draw them down as the project progresses. They will not run through your hands. Atlantic General will be obligated to make the loan payments. The loan payments will not run through your hands. So really, what you are doing is lending your ability to issue tax-exempt debt to Atlantic General Hospital. That's important for them because that lowers their borrowing costs, that allows them to restructure some of their debt and meet some of the purposes of the Economic Development Revenue Bond Act, as noted in the letter of intent, including increasing temporary and permanent employment, sustaining employment by being able to restructure some outstanding debt, and contributing to the health and welfare of the citizens of the town and the state. The resolution provides that any tax-exempt series of bonds issued by the end of this calendar year are designated as bank-qualified or qualified tax-exempt obligations for purposes of Section 265(b)(3) of the Internal Revenue Code. That's important to the hospital because they anticipate selling the bonds that the bonds will be sold to a bank, and the bank is willing to give a lower interest rate if the bonds are designated as bank qualified versus if they are not so designated. Miles and Stockbridge, a Baltimore law firm, will serve as bond counsel and as counsel to Atlantic General Hospital for purposes of the bonds if you move forward. Most importantly, whether or not the transaction closes, Atlantic General agrees to pay all costs, including the costs of all the counsel and any financial advisors involved in the transaction, whether or not the bonds are ever issued. So the town comes out of pocket for nothing. The resolution provides that it shall be liberally construed, that the ability to approve the final terms of any series of bonds is delegated to the mayor, who will act by executive order. But most importantly, the resolution also observes that the town reserves the right not to issue the bonds now or ever, or to decide to issue less than the requested amount of the bonds. This is because you could have another borrower walk in to the town before these bonds are issued and say, we want to borrow money from you, and the town has the ability to decide which is serves a greater public purpose. That's the general overview. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I understand, at least from previous conversations, that this has no impact on our good faith and credit of the town.
That's absolutely right. You are not pledging any tax revenues or your obligation to raise taxes to pay this debt. If there is a default, the town is not responsible for anything. It is all on Atlantic General Hospital.
And it is, basically, this is to say that we would be, I guess the only restriction is that we wouldn't be allowing any more issuance of tax-exempt bonds for a year.
This basically means by agreeing to designate the bonds as tax-exempt for the actual amount issued, if it's up to $10 million, because of that bank qualification, you won't be able to issue any other debt for the town's own purposes within calendar year 2017. That goes away as of January 1, 2018.
But that is also in our budget, doesn't call for that.
It does not. And before we even had Atlantic General Hospital submit the letter of intent, there were a number of conversations back and forth as to whether the town anticipated issuing any debt for its own purposes this calendar year.
Now, we previously talked about tiering the debt similar to the 2010 issuance ABC. Are we still pursuing that same strategy, or?
I believe at this point they are anticipating that one series of bonds will be issued all at one time versus trying to separate the issues. Initially, the hospital was thinking that because the proceeds might be used to refinance some of the existing bonds the town had previously issued for the hospital's benefit, because some of those bonds were designated as bank qualified through a quirk in the tax code, we might have been able to have the town issue more than $10 million, both for the new money financing and for refinancing purposes. The town is simultaneously pursuing financing through the Maryland Health and Higher Educational Facilities Authority, and working with its advisors, the hospital decided that it would not look to have the town issue bonds to refinance the town's existing debt. They're going to have MHIFA issue those bonds. And so in this case, since they're coming to you basically for new money financing, including a refinancing of an existing mortgage loan, there will probably be only one series.
Okay. And how much interest are they looking at saving, approximately?
I believe what the financial advisor told us back in April or May, and of course it's always subject to market movement,
sure,
but they were anticipating over the life of the issue almost $650,000, I believe it was.
And that can go into more important things other than interest, like some of us sitting up here today.
Yeah, that money can be redirected to other hospital purposes.
Absolutely. So. Well spent that way.
And again, I'm sure you mentioned this, but I just didn't catch it. For this particular issue, since we're doing all ones, what is the life span of the bonds? How long will they be?
Well, I have not actually seen any draft bond documents, but typically these are no more than 20 or 30-year bonds.
Does anyone have any other questions for Lindsay?
It's not a question, but just for the record, I wanted to note that the resolution was duly introduced on the 12th of June.
June 12th.
Mr. Mayor, you should formally open the public hearing.
Okay. Do you have any other questions? We'll have them here. Okay. Now, open the public hearing on the issuance of revenue bonds for Atlantic General Hospital Corporation. Does anyone here from the state of Maryland wish to address the mayor and council? Is anyone here from Worcester County wish to address the mayor and council? Is there anyone in attendance tonight that wishes to address us on this issue? And seeing no hands raised, I now close the public hearing. Okay. So now we formally entertain the resolution, and we can vote on that.
Yep.
Now that the hearing is been given an opportunity to happen.
Yep.
All right, we have the resolution 2017-05, which basically enacts everything that Lindsay was just explaining to us and the public. Do we have any motion to adopt that resolution?
Motion to approve.
We have a motion by Council Member Goyes to adopt resolution number 2017-05, which is the issuance of revenue bonds for AGH, Atlantic General Hospital Corporation.
May I ask one question?
Sure.
Mr. Gaskell, my wife works part-time for Atlantic General. Am I allowed to vote on this?
I don't think you recuse yourself.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Great. Thank you very much. The record shows that the motion passed unanimously. Right. Next is Resolution 2017-06, Post-Issuance Tax Compliance Procedures for Conduit Tax Exempt Obligations.
Once again, I'd ask Lindsay to come forward.
This one will be shorter.
It'll be shorter than the
I'll be shorter than the last one. So several years ago when the town was doing a debt borrowing for its own purposes, we put in place post-issuance tax compliance procedures that are designed to help the town ensure compliance with federal tax code requirements through the life of an issue. Around 2010, 2011, it was actually past 2010, the IRS started beating the drum and saying that while with a tax-exempt issue, issuers or borrowers always sign a tax certificate at closing, from their audit experience, they were finding that there were certain particular areas where issuers or borrowers were not complying throughout the life of the issue with all the tax code requirements. Two of those areas were arbitrage rebate calculation and payment, and the other was the change in use. And change in use can happen inadvertently. You finance a facility for 20 years, town hall. Let's say the town grows rapidly, your employees grow rapidly, you run out of space. And the first thought is, well, we're going to build a new town hall. What do we do with the old town hall? Let's try and lease it to a private company because there are lots of companies in town who need office space. Well, if your tax-exempt bonds are still outstanding, before you do that, in order to maintain the tax-exempt nature of the bonds, you have to comply with the change in use rules. The IRS was finding that did not always happen. So they started strongly urging issuers to put these written procedures in place. You already have them for debt for your own purposes. Now we are putting in place procedures for any conduit borrowings. That would apply to this issue and any other conduit revenue obligations that the town issues in the future. And what we really do in these very short procedures, the substantially final form of which are attached to the resolution, is we basically put the onus of complying with tax code requirements on the borrower. And we say it's all yours. Anytime an issue is done, bond counsel and issuers counsel ought to make sure that, you know, these boxes are ticked off. And yes, we will ask the borrower to either annually give us a report, are you complying, or give us a report upon request. But we're really shifting the burden to the borrower. And by having these written procedures in place, when you close any bond issue, you file a variation of what's known as a Form 8038. And there are now boxes on that form which you are supposed to check if you have these written procedures in place. And so adopting the procedures in this instance will allow you going forward for any conduit revenue issue to check the box.
A question on procedure and making this something we can duplicate each year regardless of who's sitting here and as we evolve this program many years. Is there any point in our when our audit is done, or when is there a time that would be easily recognizable by all of us and our successors to make sure that that was done?
Well, and the audit is a good idea. I do have other issuers, more so for debt for their own purposes than with conduit revenue bonds, but you could easily do it with conduit revenue bonds. Several of my issuers say they have now built into the checklist, they go over with their auditors, have you complied with your post-issuance tax compliance procedures? And also for issuers who have outstanding public debt, there are certain continuing disclosure undertakings they have to comply with now when they offer bonds to the municipal market, and they are also putting those in the checklist they go over with their auditors.
I don't know if it requires us of David and Laura. Hopefully this will be self-explanatory, but I would like whatever we need to do for the council to be able to consider making that a standing policy so that it succeeds all of us. Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense, but, you know, a year from now, we're going to go, what did we say?
Right. You know,
so if whatever we need to do, if that's a resolution,
well,
or if it's just
you mean making it part of the audit checklist?
Yeah.
The substantially final form of the procedures are attached. Based on this discussion, it was delegated to several officials the authority to finalize the procedures working with council.
Okay.
I will put that in the final procedures before I submit them to the town for...
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
Any other questions for Lindsay? It's a somewhat arcane, very important requirements here, and I appreciate your time in explaining.
That's what I'm here for. Thank you.
Does anybody wish to make a motion on Resolution 2017-06?
Motion to approve 2017-06.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Brittingham to approve Resolution 2017-06, which basically is just what Lindsay said once. We're not even going to summarize. But all in favor say aye. Thank you. If that motion passes unanimously, thank you. Next, and number three on the agenda is contract awards. Who's going to take the lead on this?
Mary.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Nice to see you all.
Thank you. I can address the first three, Mayor. The first one is for the youth program coordination agreement. This is the same contract as we have had in place in prior years. There are only two main differences, one being the dollar amount is reflected as per their presentation to you earlier this year as part of the budget process and the amount that that was budgeted for them. And the way that they will invoice us, in the past, they've invoiced us on a monthly basis for the monthly program, on a quarterly basis for expenses, and then on an as-needed basis for other items. What this does is just take the total amount of the allocation and allow them to invoice us once a month in whatever amount they need to for that month. So it'll make things easier.
Bottom line, it comes the same amount.
Exactly.
If they need more some months than others.
Exactly. As long as they won't exceed the $40,300 per year.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions for Mary regarding this?
I have not moved to
approve. Okay. We have a motion to approve the youth program coordination agreement, contract award in the amount of $40,300 for the fiscal year, which begins July 1. The motion was made by Councilman Morrell.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Wasn't it just shy of $40,000 when they came up?
They actually also get $300 from the Parks Commission's budget for the MML Children's Party, which will be going on tomorrow night, actually. But that we just decided to go ahead and include it. It comes from a different area of the budget, but it will include it in their overall contract.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
This is the second year for that, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Apparently, it has been very well received.
I know before Ocean City was handling for a number of years before they took over.
Okay, do we have a motion to approve?
Okay.
We have a motion to approve the youth program coordination agreement for $40,300. Motion was made by Councilman Burrell. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. Next is the contract for CARS technology.
Again, this is the same contract as has been seen in prior years. Their cost remains the same this fiscal year as it did last year, or for FY17. It's for their monthly service to the town. It's primarily proactive, but also if we have problems or breakdowns, most of those are included in the contract. Things that would not tend to be included would be things that would require actual purchase of items like monitors or cables or that sort of thing.
And Mary, based on the experience of the past year, are you all recommending that we renew the contract and you're satisfied with the service and the
We are, and it's consistent with the information we provided during the budget work session. So.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion to approve the CARS technology contract.
Motion to approve.
Okay. The motion to approve the CARS technology contract. By Councilman Gullius. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. The next contract is for D3 Corporation, who is, are the folks who do all the maintenance and any website design and so forth for our town websites.
Correct. And once again, it's basically the same contract as you had every other year. Their price has not gone up. It's been $125 a month for as long as we've done business with them.
That's it, $125 a month?
Oh,
that's a no-brainer.
I can even program it, don't you? Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Burrell to approve the D3 Corporation contract for fiscal 18. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion passes unanimously.
For the William Street Culvert Project, if I could just proceed for a second. I'm going to ask Darrell to come forward and just explain the bid process and what his recommendation is.
Darrell, again, even though you're a fairly regular guest here and contractor, just to go introduce yourself and your position.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Yes, Darrell Kolar with EA Engineering Science Technology. Project manager for this project through permitting and design. We are finally through permitting and design and seeking. So bids over the past few weeks, got two bidders. Both have done work before. The low bidder is Goody Hill. I guess before I get into that, I'll just give you a brief, you know, what the project is. So we got some funding from a couple sources. So one specific for this project is through MEMA, and ultimately FEMA is the funding agency that provided some hazard mitigation funding since it's connected to the electric plant. And, you know, we demonstrated that the impacts of flooding that had on the plant itself, you know, with the generator, some residents in towns in Berlin and so forth. So that's where the funding for some of it is coming from. And then we have the other grant from Department of Natural Resources. So this is, and the reason why we got the funding from the Department of Natural Resources is because we added a component, which is we call the offline wetlands. It's not a required wetland. It's not wetland mitigation. It's not a constructed wetland. We call it offline wetland because it's solely, you know, at our, you know, initiative for some water quality, and DNR recognized that to give us funding. So it's Hudson Branch at William Street, and downstream there's a confluence where the waterway comes from up in the from like Nelson, you know, Franklin, Pine, and Cedar, and all the kids over there. So opening that up is our initiative as we work upstream to provide some relief up that way as well. So this hopefully will provide further relief up in that area, provide relief from the electric plant. And, you know, we have some utilities. You know, we're very close to a gravity sewer that we're hoping that we can just encase it in some concrete and put our storm piping over top of it. And in the confluence area, there's a sewer utility there as well that we'll replace, and then the section that's underneath it will encase in concrete as well. And then we know there's a water line under our, we have it in the bid for relocation, but we can decide when we open up the road.
Is that the water line that we believe goes under William Street?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Correct, yeah.
And I don't mean to interrupt, but, and I know before you do something, it's awfully hard, especially when you're talking about nature and water and flooding. Is it your expectation that once this phase is done, that the flooding that has basically plagued this neighborhood, this greater neighborhood, for at least a half a century will be either eliminated or significantly reduced?
I would say eliminated. I would say reduced, and it'd be hesitant to say significantly reduced because we still have other project, or one other project to do that will get as far up as in that Cedar Franklin area. We're going to see how far we can get with the funding, but the next phase is really getting up to Cedar and really putting in some sizable piping.
Okay.
When we get over to Franklin and Nelson, it's really difficult. A lot of utilities there. We have utility conflicts going through other utilities. We've learned a lot in these past few projects to do really aggressive utility locates. On this project itself, we had a company out there doing ground penetrating radar to try to figure out exactly what. And even during the bid process, we had a lot of questions about the gas. We do got to meet with the gas company. Our understanding is they have detailed AutoCAD drawings that we want to get our hands on and work with them.
Thank goodness that technology is available, otherwise you'd find out everything the hard way. So is it reasonable to say that, again, after the final phase, I think our, if I recall correctly, our thing was, let's do all the things that, all three phases, see how everything's working, and then after a reasonable period of time, you know, yeah. And I'm not talking 5 years or something here, but after a reasonable period of time where we've had a lot of different weather situations, then we can analyze any tweaks are necessary anywhere along this project?
I think once we get as far as we can with the funding up to that area, and we have some rain events, we can certainly see, you know, if we are where we need to be. Our model shows, you know, the system's undersized all the way up to Ocean City Boulevard, you know, in front of, you know, the dispatch. That's quite an initiative to get replaced piping all the way up through that road. That's tearing up a lot of money.
What is the goal of this of these next two phases?
Okay, so the goal on this project is to get to replace the piping underneath William Street and open up the confluence that collects the stormwater from, I call it the Grand Bryce Franklin Nelson area.
Okay.
So that will help in this phase provide some relief. We still have some more jetting to do to clean out. There was a drastic amount of accumulated sediment. So my understanding is the last few storm events that we've had, it's receded a lot quicker. Now, there's certainly some standing water we've seen on Nelson. That's not going away. But my understanding is it's receding a lot quicker, you know, within a couple hours an hour versus, you know, we've seen that sit for hours. But the last sizable event that I've seen, it proceeded pretty quickly. And that's that relief. It doesn't have the capacity to remove it right away, but at least as we're working upstream and we're opening that up, getting some more sizable piping, getting this confluence, when that water gets there, it can get out faster. So it's not going to be completely resolved until we can get all the way up there. But
through all three phases.
Correct.
Okay. And after we do all three phases, after this project is complete and all phases have been done, flooding in the town of Berlin will be considerably reduced.
Considerably reduced, but we still have a ways to go.
Yeah,
there's numerous areas in town. This is, you know, like the main vein, you know, through town that's connected up, you know, a lot that provides the most widespread relief. You know, there's numerous areas in town that we can address, and we're going to continue to seek funding. And
but that's why the utility doesn't go away.
Yeah.
We just figure out where we go. I might have oversimplified by saying tweaking, but basically, this is an ongoing project where once, I'll call it the main artery, and it has been addressed, then we'll go and say, okay, here's another critical area, here's another critical area. And over time.
There's further initiative to get out further past. West Street, you know, and Abbey Lane, that side of town, you know, getting over to the lift station on the edge of town, on Kitts Branch, over by the hospital. We have some flooding there. That's, you know, right on the edge of town, but, you know, that flooding over there on that pump station makes me nervous. You know, I'd like to address that. You know, some just localized areas all over the place.
Okay.
After all this work has been done, there'll still be some monitoring on the Fly Street area where the holding pond and all that is to make sure that things have been put in place correctly.
Yes.
Because thus far, most of the drainage is going to end up going.
That's where it goes. You're correct.
So I'm kind of concerned about, especially the property owners along that stretch of ditching before you get to Flower Street. And then once you get to Flower Street, you know, whether the holding pond is operating correctly and like it should be and everything else.
Absolutely. We do want to keep an eye on it, especially since we made some adjustments, you know, during the construction phase and stuff. I know we still have a plan to get out there with Jane and Jamie and some crew to put some check dams in there. We opened that up. It's great. The flow gets through there, but now it gets through there fast. So we want to slow it down and get some of that erosion input, you know, controls in place.
I noticed vegetation in the ditching area before you get to the culverts. Is that part of the slowing down situation?
Yeah, right. Or the 90 degrees bends,
right.
Exactly right there. Yeah. Because we want to armor those banks and armor with some stone. Maybe put. I want to put a check dam of sorts in there, but I don't want to. They can back up the flow, so we want to slow the flow down, but we want to still get it through. I don't want to, you know, counteract what we just did.
Vegetation looks like, hey, they haven't finished cleaning the ditch yet, but I figured maybe that's part of the slowing down process.
Yeah, when we get that velocity down, then we're in a better position to get out some of that accumulated sediment, especially in the stone just beyond that head wall downstream. We really want to clean that out. It looked great, and then, you know, we had a couple of big storms that kind of washes in. It's not that bad. It's just it can look better.
And William Street's completely grant funded?
Correct. Well, I'm sorry. For the FEMA portion, there's a 25% town match. We requested some time extension with them, and in my explanation there, I stated, you know, the town's portion intends to cover the match through maybe directly purchasing materials or consultant fees or I put in there in-kind match, which I'm hoping that I can demonstrate through, you know, time with Jane and Jamie and staff, that we can put hours and money to that. So it is time spent on that project, but it's, you know, it's a little bit more economically friendly for the town if we can demonstrate some in-kind matches than, you know, actual dollars.
If I may, for all three of these projects, these phases, we have approximately $1.9 million with a $60,000 cash or in-kind match. So it's a pretty good
It's working. We've got a tremendous amount of work already on all aspects of the project so far. So I don't see it being any problem meeting that, just jetting out the...
Yeah. I certainly think we can demonstrate it.
And I don't know if anybody heard Zach's question, but the question was, is it all budgeted? The answer is yes.
Oh, sorry. Yes. if I may, the budgets came in pretty close. Goody Hill is the low bidder. We recently worked with them on West Street. I know we got some button up to do with them, but I certainly didn't have a problem signing a letter recommending them for this. Now, this is for the full amount. I put in some alternate items. One is there's a section of piping that stems from the piping underneath William Street up to the next catch basin towards the town. I think in the bid that was about $60,000 or so. So I may regroup if we want to save that money and put it towards the next phase. I think our real relief is to get in that pipe under William Street. So if we could save that money, that line item, I think it's better spent going up towards Grand Prix and Nelson. But we can figure that out as we're going along, or actually at the pre-construction meeting.
So we're requesting approval to award a contract to Goody Hill in the amount of $396,470 to do the work that Dawes described.
Is that part of our package?
I had emailed it out to him on Friday. I have hard copies of his memo and a summary tally sheet.
Do I have a copy?
Sure. Kelsey, would you mind grabbing the rest of them? Yeah, on Friday, I emailed you the summary sheet with the memo as well as the packages for you. What Kelsey's grabbing is Darnell's memo and then the tally sheet that he put together to the table. Thanks. Here's some more copies for you guys. That was my whole bunch of ask for put it up here.
Yeah, make sure you keep it.
After all, okay, right?
Yeah.
Approval of the contract to Goody Hill for $396,470. Say your motion.
I'll make the motion. 15's okay. If you have time to review. Yes, I'll make the motion that we move forward with the William Street Culvert Stormwater Project.
All right, thank you. We have a motion by Council, we have a commotion by Councilman Tindall to approve the William Street Culvert Stormwater Project contract award to Goody Hill for in the amount of $396,470. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes unanimously.
Great.
Now we're down to the West Street paving.
Great. Unfortunately, we did not have time to pull those numbers together for you. I put them on the agenda with the expectation that we would, but that just didn't come together. So we're going to bring that back for your consideration at a future meeting.
Okay.
I could just add, if I may, quickly to that. In their contract, they're going to try to at least get some of that base paving, up from Olive Branch.
On West Street.
Yeah, on West Street. So we're going to get some of that gravel there and get some blacktop in. But the bigger picture, we'll bring some numbers to you.
Great.
Thank you very much for your work.
All right, thank you.
Keep that water flowing.
All right, good job.
Yeah. Okay. Number four is a proposed event policy. And Ivy, are you going to present this?
I am.
Okay. And Constance, basically the thinking behind it and you highlight some things you made us particularly aware of.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Tonight, I am proposing a new Town of Rowland downtown event policy. This is for events that are taking place downtown with road closures. The reason that I was requested to put this together was because Berlin has become very popular as a venue for events, and we've been literally in my office, at least once a week, someone will come in and say, I've got a great idea for an event. Let's do it next week. So we needed to put together something so we can have some kind of frame of reference on when events would be discussed and when we can start planning for them. The other reason behind this is, historically, the town has approved events in the month of January, and with that late date, the event wrap cards and the event cards aren't able to be distributed during the holiday shopping season. So my recommendation was I would like to very much have our events in place by the end of September. This way we can have all of our promotions and wrap cards and advertisements for the holiday shopping season, and the business community is very thrilled that they can actually put event cards into people's shopping bags when they're doing their holiday shopping. Plus, I submit to a variety of state agencies, national agencies about all the events that are in town, and their deadlines are mid-September. So it just makes sense to do this a little bit in the summer instead of waiting until late fall or even winter. So with that said, I'd just like to read what this policy says. If you have any questions, please go ahead, feel free to ask. And we've worked on this for several months, and we'd like to make changes by all means. I'll just start from the top. Town of Berlin Downtown Event Application Policy. This form must be completed in full and include certificate of insurance and detailed description of event. All downtown events for the following year must be submitted between July 1st and September 1st. Example, submit by September 1st, 2017 for an event taking place in 2018. Only one event that requires town services will be scheduled per day. Event organizers are encouraged to check the town calendar and coordinate with economic development staff in advance of submitting their application. Events will be reviewed by staff for compliance with this policy. Organizers are required to meet with staff to discuss the event in detail prior to application approval and 2 to 3 weeks before the event. Town administrator may authorize non-alcohol events that have a good track record with the town. New events and events that include alcohol will be submitted to the mayor and council for their approval in September for events to be held in the following calendar year. Restrictions. Loud generators will not be permitted. Generators do not any louder than 58 decibels. Thanks, Tim, for that. Vendors must be out of the road by the end of the event time. That's approved by the mayor and council. Vendors must remove their own trash. Food vendors will not be allowed to empty grease or food waste onto the road. Unfortunately, we do have to put that because if we don't put it, it happens. Approval of event will be determined by the town of Berlin. We will notify you if you have been selected to present your event for approval by the mayor and council. Your appearance for approval by mayor and council is mandatory. And also, which is not attached to this, just to give us a little frame of reference on type of event and what the event is for, we're also including a Berlin downtown event description for staff review. First is please give a brief description and purpose of the event. If a fundraiser, please indicate and list the beneficiary. How many and what type of vendors will you have? If there will be food, and just to make sure that the food vendors do get a health permit from Worcester County Health Department, because some food vendors don't realize that they have to do that. Will there be live music, DJ, what kind of music, what is their marketing plan, their parking, shuttle plan, inclement weather, and special requests.
Is the purpose basically to allow for what I call ongoing events that have been established to basically have a procedure where it can be handled at staff level and everybody knows what to expect?
That's correct.
You have an earlier window of opportunity to address issues. Everything gets approved a little earlier, which explains all the reasons for that.
That's correct.
But basically, we don't have to keep reinventing the wheel.
Exactly.
But anything that's new, if it's a new event, mm-hmm. or if it's an event that requires they're asking for
all events are cool now.
Yeah, that those then are handled separately. So I guess what we've been doing in the past is, or at least attempting
yes.
to. Let's just take the events where alcohol, we've always limited up the maximum six.
Six.
So, yeah. And so,
that's not changing. Only six alcohol events per year. That is remaining the same.
Yeah.
So in that case, no new alcohol events can be added unless one is eliminated.
You're right. One drops out or
right.
whatever. And so basically, if something is in place, they haven't had a problem, and it's approved, except we have to have a separate motion on a separate. We have a separate motion then on the events that have asked to have the ability to serve alcohol. But basically, we have just two motions now.
Correct.
And both are in mid-September.
Yes.
Which is great for marketing.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, I think, another point here is to make sure that we, you know, the best we can is this 2 to 3 weeks before the event. Obviously, they need to meet before they get a
report. Right, and that happens now. That happens. We have whoever's running the event comes in 2 weeks prior to the event, and we have a staff meeting on Thursday, and they come in and we discuss all the details.
Right, and all I'm saying there is that just with newer events, you might want to request that more than one person's there. Because sometimes I think with newer events, they don't realize what they've gotten themselves
right
into.
Right.
Until they've done one, and then
right
they go, oh, I don't know if we'll ever do that again. But no, but that's great. That's good. Does anyone have any questions or comments?
I got a question for Jane. Is it okay for them to dump their grease and food into the system?
No.
It's just not here.
No, it says it's not okay to dump it into the road. It said food vendors will not be allowed to empty grease or food waste onto road, but it needs to say into our system.
Or what's the stop them from throwing it in the trash can or something? I mean, it's worded somehow, they got to take it with them?
Yeah.
Because we don't want to pour them in the drain.
What happens now? Do you know what happens now?
Well, we have blocked several of them dumping their grease down the storm drain, and that was what we said we would not allow.
Yeah.
And they need to take it all with them. But this, I mean, that was a year ago. Mm-hmm. We've since nipped that.
That's what brought on this.
Right.
What you're saying is you want to clear one of its boats with them.
Yes.
I think what, if I'm wrong, I think what's been saying is not just road. We know what you mean by road, but any stormwater conveyance, the roadway, and that all of this material needs to be removed by the vendor.
Okay. Yeah, we can change that. Yeah.
You don't mind just being explicit because, mm-hmm, you know, everybody's trying to do the right thing, but quite frankly, it's not a matter of people trying to be bad. It's just they don't think about the stuff until they get ready to pack up and leave, and then they go, uh-oh.
I can dump it in a drain.
Yeah. I just think it's a lack of foresight.
The language was intended to
just
tell them
just two quick things.
It's in the road.
It is in the town code.
Sorry.
Yeah. But cannot.
I know, but what I'm saying, this is what they're going to be reading.
Yeah.
You see, yeah, I agree.
We'll be more explicit.
More explicit, yeah.
I mean, two quick things. Number one, if we pass something like this tonight, are you ready to deploy this Saturday and let everybody know about it so that they're not banging on your door August 31st?
Oh, yeah, we'll send a press release out. We'll social media, we'll spread the word.
How about contacting all the organizations that have been approved by the letter?
And they're not blindsided.
And I know this might seem like overkill, but there again, the events affect so many people, not just the sponsors, right, or the sponsoring groups. Why don't you make that one where they had some registered letter so you know that they got it? And, you know, we're just trying to make sure everybody's
involved. Also, I think a phone call always works best.
But I agree. It's like we're trying to make the playing field even for everyone. We're trying to be fair to everyone, but we're also trying to make sure that people prepare so that if we're dealing with the town or anybody's dealing with something, it's something that's unexpected and unanticipated.
Well, on that same note, that lets me segue into my next question. You mentioned something that caught my ear. It was about the alcohol events. I know that some of the council members still have questions about that, but that aside, you said that if you do not allow any more than six, so if those six lock that in, what's to stop number 7 through 10 coming up? They have to wait till somebody else falls out?
That's correct.
Do you have that many
going
on?
That's absolutely correct.
Do you have that many requests for them?
No. Not for alcohol events, no.
Okay, you're saying no, Chief shaking his head.
We have people always ask the question if they can have their new event, and it stops real quick. So
does it?
You
okay.
Always have people inquiring about the next event. We've actually had the big meeting with staff and with the chamber and all the businesses coming together, and they looked at the number of events and the dates, and they're all bunched together, a whole lot of them. And the consensus was we don't need a whole lot more events. And I think this is one of the things the policy is going to do, is that they're look at when we have the events and make sure they don't come right on top of each other so the staff can adequately go ahead and provide services, one. And then make sure that the people have enough time to go ahead and put the good product. Again, if you have an event every week, you have a couple of them that are not really up to muster, then it'll really reflect upon the town. So we want to go ahead and make sure the events are done correctly and properly, that everybody can really enjoy them.
Thank you, Chief. Okay. There's my question. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments regarding the...
I have a question for Ivy. Ivy, who runs most of the events? Like, are they organized by the town or the chamber or different groups?
Most of the events are run by the chamber.
And have they already been advised on policy and what we're proposing?
Yes.
So they've at least been advised and...
And included in yes.
Okay. Yeah. And I think you ran it past the merchants as well.
I've run it past anyone who'll listen.
And you're still here.
Okay. And we're still listening.
That's pretty good.
So you'll make those suggestions yes. that Councilman Lewis recommended?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great idea. Thank you.
At this point, do we need a motion?
We need a motion on this.
Okay. Yes. Do we have a motion to approve the event policy as amended or recommended for amendment by Councilman Goyes?
Motion to approve with the stipulation so long as all these additions are made and our town administrator approves. And that's okay.
And just send us a copy when you get it all.
Yeah.
It's also good to know because
they're going to ask.
They're going to ask. Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Goyes to approve the amended downtown event application policy and procedure. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Thank you very much. Thank you. All right, next is number five on the agenda, ordinance 2017-03, Parks and Recreation.
The ordinance that you have in front of you, this is the first reading for this ordinance. It reflects the entire chapter on Parks and Recreation. And the reason for that is because there were so many small changes in so many different places that the entire chapter needed to be shown so that everything was in context. So what I'd like to do is go through and make sure that you are aware of exactly which changes are being made. As with any other ordinance, if an item is struck through, it's being deleted. If it's underlined, it's being added. The first item is in section 2219, subsection 3. The word with is being added. There in the first line, you'll see the word with underlined. It was simply a missing word. So that's just a housekeeping item. Section 2221, subsection B. This is being changed to reflect the true nature of how the Parks Commission works. They currently do select a chair, but not a secretary and not a safety director. For one thing, they are all volunteers. It really would not be appropriate or a good idea for any of them to act as safety director. Plus, we also now have a staff member who is a certified playground inspector. So it simply makes sense to change that language to reflect that. Section 2222, subsection B, the difference between will and may. The word will is being removed and the word may is being inserted. That takes it from something that is compulsory for the Parks Commission to do to something that is an option for them. Then same section, subsection C. Again, this refers to safety inspections. That entire section is being struck. The remaining sections are being renumbered accordingly, and in what will become subsection D, the word hearings is being changed to meetings. A public hearing is an official legal function, whereas a public meeting is a different thing. Under Article 3, Parks, section 2247, definitions, this entire section is new, and it provides definitions of several terms that may mean different things according to how they're being applied in the code. These definitions apply specifically to the parks. Section 2248. Previously, references to the light attendance courts at Stephen Decatur Park were under rules and regulations, but this sentence actually belongs more appropriately under ours, since that's what it addresses. Section 2249, subsection 2. This changes the way that motor vehicles are treated in the parks. previously basically said that you couldn't park a motor vehicle anywhere except where it was authorized by the police department. Realistically, the police department and other departments of the town, such as public works, would have more impact on that. So it references the operation and parking of unauthorized motor vehicles. That way our vehicles can still go into parks when they need to. And subsection 4 is being struck. It simply makes sense to allow bicycles in the park. And then subsequent sections are being renumbered. What will be section 6 is changing, instead of prohibiting alcoholic beverages outright, it prohibits them outright except in cases where the mayor and council has granted permission. And what that basically does is free you up to give permission should you find there's a reason, an event that should allow it. Number 8 and 9, for some reason, were repeated. They were the hours of the tennis court, so they're obviously both being struck as the one is being moved under hours. Subsection 7 is a completely new section. This gets into how we handle events and activities for reserving parks facilities. Right now, the pavilion at Stephen Decatur and William Henry Park are available for reservation. The tennis courts and basketball courts, while we have never really addressed it formally, we have occasionally had requests for people to use those courts for whatever reasons, basketball courts for tournaments in particular. So we're addressing that, making it understood that anyone who wishes to reserve the facilities has to complete the appropriate form and pay the fees. Prior to this, while we were charging a fee for people to reserve the pavilions, it was never actually officially addressed in the code. We've gotten a number of requests here just lately for events that really are more like special events rather than a family party for the parks. And so we're trying to address what would qualify something as a special event and how that would be handled. So that's those last two sections of that section.
Would that be something like the National Night Out? Would that be an example?
National Night Out would be an example. However, the requests that we've gotten have been more along the lines of a given organization wants to reserve the park for, say, a company party. Large number of people, they're bringing in extra items, and we really have no way of handling that. Obviously, there's a difference between a company party and, say, a 10-year-old's birthday. So we need to be able to kind of distinguish between those different types of events.
Extra items such as, I think when you were saying, like a some sort of an archery kind of thing, like a
right.
rubber point on it, and the other one was some sort of water.
There was a dunk tank sort of thing, or even just a bounce house.
Right.
We need to be able to address for one thing, they're using electric beyond what the pavilion has. And there's also a question of liability. We have to be sure that if they are bringing those sort of outside things in, that the town can't be held liable should any mishaps occur.
Okay, great.
The next ordinance, 2017-04, much simpler, and actually stems from the section in the Parks Code about bicycles. While we want to allow bicycles in the park, because of the way the code was previously written, bicycles were so stringently defined as to where they could be, what we've done is struck that section and simply rewritten it to say that people who are riding bikes in the park have to be responsible. That's kind of it in a nutshell.
Does anyone have any questions for Mary regarding any of the recommended changes, deletions or additions to either of these two ordinances affecting the parks?
Just two things real quick.
Sure.
On the pavilion rental, everyone pays for that regardless, correct?
Yes.
And the reason for that was years ago, unfortunately, some people wouldn't clean up after themselves. So by paying that fee, it's, I don't know, it's
fairly nominal.
It is. It is. It's $50 to reserve the pavilion, $10 if you're going to use electric, and you get $25 back, provided everything is in good condition.
And I think we've had pretty close to 100% compliance once we started that very simple bylaw thing. It's kind of interesting how much influence that people put money at.
And the second thing we need to think about, which I don't see is in here, it may be addressed somewhere else, so if it is, please just tell me.
I'm just thinking the exact same thing.
Because I got buzzed one night, my wife and I didn't know what the hell it was. Yeah. And of course, I'm thinking, you know, wasp bat, whatever.
Yeah.
But somebody else complained about that as well to me, so. Well, it wasn't you, right? Because I know you would have hit me, or at least chased me with the damn thing.
Actually, that's probably something that should be looked at town-wide.
Because now they're actually racing these things.
Yeah.
And it's going to hurt somebody at some point. Sure, do what you want on your property. But it's something I think we need to consider. I don't know how you write that. That's David's Avenue. But it's something we need to think about. Look at him. He's dancing the drone up already.
Let me make a suggestion that I asked David, or you asked David, to look into that. My understanding is that there are some legal constraints with regard to when drones can fly over, what they can fly over under the FAA regulations.
But the FAA is not going to be here to enforce them. We are.
Right. Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, what was your recommendation then, that we adopt and adapt those regulations so that it can be enforceable?
I know what the city has, but mainly for FAA rules, but can we come up with something?
Sure.
How do you?
It says for.
My suggestion would be, if you're interested in pursuing these changes, go ahead and move them, and then
And these ordinances are scheduled for a public hearing next month.
Okay. That's why I'm hoping that we're not something we can get in.
Doing anything today.
Right.
Yeah. Well, if something's added between now and then, does that mean we have to postpone the hearing?
No.
So we could. Prior to the public hearing, say, okay, here's a section about drones, and explain what's about. And just my suggestion is between you and Mary, what you saw there.
I can tell you, I mean, if you want to address it in these two ordinances, that it would only apply to public parks.
Right.
It would not apply to
downtown or
downtown.
I didn't say
the
purpose suggestion.
Well, I mean, do we agree that we want to go ahead and have it effective?
Yeah, I mean, we've got to do something. Because I really appreciated what Troy did over the pond that Jane and everybody will. I thought that was awesome. And I think things like that, which help the mayor and council, or maybe educational, that's fine. But having these things roll by you at 60 miles an hour, a little unheard of.
Yeah.
And I think there was one on Christmas parade. So, like they're used.
What?
Yeah, there was one above one of the floats filming some stuff. But that's not a bad thing, but maybe we need to have like a pre-approval process.
Pre-approval, yes, you got to operate safe.
Well, so do you have to have a license for those things now?
If you're going to do commercial. Well, would you make a note in about the Christmas parade? Because, yeah, that's. It's probably, if one doing it, probably 6 and 5 years we'll try it again. You know, it's uncharted territory, but it's definitely works out. But at least then we'll have this address for our public parks, and then we can figure out what to do about the rest. I think, too, that's something we're contacting with other municipalities.
Yeah.
And that bar is in a perfect position to kind of get some good but free advice.
You should have seen his eyes when I brought up John. Dear Lord, you look like that.
No, thank you.
Starting to have fun around here.
Okay, thank you.
Call me Gilgill.
So we're leaving this alone for now?
No, I think what they'd like us to do is figure out what we can put in.
About the drugs.
And
but I just want to make sure I understand, David. You're saying if we put something in about drones in these two or this ordinance, it applies to parks.
It would.
Not townwide.
No, you can't.
Well, let's just take it one step at a time.
It's really not a good practice to put a prohibition on drones townwide in the article that deals with parks.
Yeah. No, but I don't know what we have. We haven't even discussed it. We haven't gotten any information. But are we in agreement that it's not a good idea for the parks at this time? And if times change, somebody shows can prove that it needs to be amended. But at least we've got something, because we have nothing yet. I mean, is that,
can I be good?
We can amend this.
Sure. So if we put it that way, then maybe at some point, if we have a chance to discuss it, possibly with a, I don't know, what permit for a special event or something.
I think we should, from an economic development standpoint, at least not rule them out completely. Say we have an event, we want to document it.
I think that really some study and discussion should go into this. Because if you just outlaw them at parks, there are uses of those things that are beneficial to the community.
And we would not then even be permitted to hire someone to fly over the ponds and take pictures or whatever.
I think this is not something that should be done on the fly.
Okay. Well, then let's bring it for discussion another point.
Is it our, the mayor council's intended, have everybody who parks, folks, that our town attorney, our town administrator, do some research, come up with some recommendations, pros and cons, and then we can have a discussion about it?
Councilman Brown, is that agreeable?
Well, that's fine.
Cool.
We don't need to do anything. First reading.
Were there any other questions for Mary? Mary, did you talk about how you talked about this in the Parks Commission?
Yes, the Parks Commission did review this at their last meeting, and they were in agreement.
Great. All right, next we're going to number six on the agenda, which is departmental reports. First is the Finance Director, Madam Salinas.
Good evening, Mayor Council. I have two things. Finance Department approaching the year-end fiscal 17. We're basically going through the housekeeping of closing the purchase orders, looking at the general ledger. We can sell the accounts. All the departments will be doing their annual inventory, looking at the fixed assets and capital assets and taking accounts and making sure it's tied with the schedules. And next week we will be discussing solar metering implementation in Tyler. Basically, we will have a phone conference to discuss all the details that needed. And by the end of the calendar year, which is probably going to be December or January, we should have that module implemented in Tyler, so we will not need to calculate the solar net metering manually.
Great. Okay, thank you. Any questions for Natalie?
Yes. Can you send a copy of the adopted budget, please? Electronic is fine.
Sure.
Thank you.
Next is Administrative Services Director Mary Bowen.
Just two quick things. The movie Grease will be shown this Saturday in Steve Decatur Park. This is our second summer movie. And the Parks Commission will not be meeting next week, which would be their normal meeting, because that is July 4th.
Thank you. Any questions for Mary? Next is Water Resources and Public Works Director Jane Kreider.
Short and sweet. We'll be reading meters this week, and we're replacing some of the old meters. You'll see some new faces around. We have some of our seasonal folks are on board, and the rest will be starting next week. After the holiday, so they should have some mentors around them. But if you see somebody lost, might be one of them. We'll be painting hydrants and cleaning out valve boxes and catching up on a lot of gardening and weeding that has been in the
way. Okay. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Jane?
I have the water hydrant on Flower Street, the property that we purchased from Cannery Village. The hydrant has been almost covered with weeds. I took my riding one and went around it, but I can't get close to it.
Okay, I'm
but it needs to be, it needs to be
weedy.
It's
in Cannery. Correct?
The property? No, the new property. The property.
Oh, that one. Okay. Okay.
Right on Flock Street.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I had a water meter. I asked a sprinkler meter. The bottom blew out. It was leaking one afternoon. I knew nothing about this, but I just want to go on record to let Jane know as well. The young man that came over to turn that back on for us after he took care of everything, he couldn't have been any nicer. He really could not have been any nicer. He explained what had happened. Sometimes these things go bad, evidently. And he was very professional. I wanted you to know that.
That means a lot. Thank you. I will pass it on there.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next, Electric Utility Director, Greg Lawrence.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I have a few things to report on. The police department site, the primary has been installed from Decatur Street into the site where the transformer is located. We also installed the conduit for Comcast and Verizon both as part of that project. They all went in the same easement. So we actually installed their conduit path for them while we were in there. Then also today, we terminated the primary and energized the transformer just to test it, make sure the voltage was okay in the rotation, which it was. Over at the library site, the superintendent asked that we mark the overhead power lines just for safety reasons. We put survey and tape orange ribbon about every 10 feet overhead primary line so their equipment and operators can see it, make sure they don't get into it. We ended up doing that. We also have meter reading starting this week. Over on Trap Road, which I'm sure Chief Arnold knows about this, on Monday the 19th, about probably 3 a.m. in the morning, there was a vehicle accident there that hit one of our poles, broke the pole in half and knocked out half of Sunset Lakes Trailer Park.
And my house.
And his house was out. So he knows that. By the way, we're still waiting for the sheriff's report. Jeff, I don't know if you want to be involved in that. But anyway, we had the trailer park back on by about, I think it was like 6:30, we got the power restored and poles replaced. Then also over at 324 North Main Street, we had a faulted underground electrical service, which had faulted twice in about 3 months, so we actually came from an alternative source and we dug in a new service. That location to serve the power. Then also in Intrepid Lane, we pulled in the last part of the primary that feeds all the transformers to the new townhouses. We were waiting on the utility easement to actually install the feed itself, which will feed in off the Scootman Lane, and the back feed comes back around.
This is the Decatur Farms.
Cater Farm, Trepid Lane, which I believe you had the rewrite board here. Yep. So we can finish that up also. That's fine.
Thank you.
Question. You did put an entrance light at the entrance of the Dollar General store?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I meant to tell you thanks for that because I went up there one night and I said, wait a minute, it's a lot lighter here for some reason. But you had never mentioned it, so thanks. I can drive through there a lot better now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Police Chief Arnold Downey.
Good evening, everyone. Working with Wizard Youth from Family Counseling Services with the Summer Youth Program for two events this summer. On July the 12th, we're going to go ahead and do Jolly Rogers. And the second Wednesday of August, when the Stratosphere Trampoline Park, we hope to have 50. The largest group will go to Jolly Rogers on the 12th. So we're hoping that we have participation. But we've actually gotten assistance from the deli, baked desserts. So again, great partnership again, and everyone coming together for that organization. Tomorrow, part of MML, Top Cop Breakfast, I'll be part of that. Actually, they're changing positions in that organization from Sergeant Arms, and I'm actually moving to the position of Secretary.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Currently, we're doing range training with the police department for the next couple of days. So we're in that mode with school out. And if any questions on an accident that actually happened today downtown, again, the bank is a magnet, but it was all operator error. And very pleased that they went ahead and cleaned everything up very quickly. Again, someone was attempting to park in a parking space and hit the gas a little too hard and end up into the bank. No one was seriously injured, but the fact that they actually had the road clear and everything open in a matter of a half an hour was amazing. So, again, good work done by all.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions for the chief? Next is Planning Director David Goldberg.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Yes, for now we're done with some temporary road closures. Seahawk Road, they reopened that late Friday. They got the utilities under the road like they needed to for Ocean's East, the apartment complex. And they had a brief one over here by the library, again, for utilities on Harrison Avenue. That was only a day and a half. As you're going around town, you see all the projects we've had recently at different levels of completion. Finally, we see the site work, the earth work over at the hospital, the cancer center. That's come along real fast now. The library got their foundation footings approved last week, so they started with the concrete right after. So you'll probably see that rising out of the ground shortly, too. And as you see, the police department is now enclosed, so that should speed up quickly once they get the roofing material on it, the windows in it. You'll see that that will accelerate towards the end of the year, like their timetable says. And so once it's tight to the weather, that'll move along well. Out there next to Arby's, the Shoreline Auto Dealer is getting close to completion. They'll do site work. They say they'll be open by the middle of July. July 12th is their target. They have been selling cars there. And we had five recent new single-family homes in town over the last 2 months, and they're all at different stages. And again, if you drive around the neighborhood, you see them in different stages. And so we've been quite busy with inspections and different approvals. And permits are still steady. And today, Carolyn Duffy from my department and I, we were at MML also, and I thank you for sending us there.
Thanks for going.
Good. And I saw you with the flag.
Yeah, speaking of the
flag. You did well.
It's actually up at MML for the convention.
Good.
It'll come back home on Wednesday.
Good.
It'll come back home on Wednesday.
Is it in the spring?
No, not in the $50,000 street, that's for sure.
The new man on the council always gets done for that job.
He's sitting up there with all the other good stuff.
Thank you. Our next is Economic and Community Development Director Ivy Wells.
Thank you. So I put together some photos, if you could take a look. That was our second Third Thursday lunchtime concert, and the crowd was even more, the attendance was greater than it was the first time. And I just wanted to show you what it looks like. If you haven't had a chance to make it over there, it's a really fun day and intergenerational. There's moms and babies and seniors and all ages. So it was a really nice time. So those are some pictures. And then also I'd like to announce that this morning, our Facebook page has now 10,000 likes, which is a pretty big milestone. So I wanted to show that all as well. And then also I'd like to thank Tim and his guys for helping out in the clutch for the farm to table dinner on Friday. There's a lot of things that go into an event that nobody really knows about, but we all know what's going on. So Tim and his guys really came through for us, and as did Jane and her water resources guys. So they really helped out during the day for that event. So I'd like to thank them also. And that's
they sold out, so I don't think.
Yeah, 160 people all having dinner together.
So that's great. Wow. And on the hottest night of summer so far.
Yeah.
No, very good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Be sure to pass on to your folks.
Will do.
How much we appreciate what I understand with some last minute
changes.
Very less.
Alterations. Yeah, good. Thank you. All right, next is Managing Director Jeff Fleetwood.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I have nothing.
Next is Town Administrator's Report.
I have nothing to report.
Okay. I have nothing either. It's a council.
No, I'll bring up a few later.
Okay. All right. Do we have
any tonight
would like to bring in?
No,
but questions, comments?
No one?
No one?
No. We see. Yeah. It's been a while. I'm back. Jack Orr's Broad Street. I just have, actually, I have a list on my phone. It's not that. It's not that bad. It's kind of, I found out that this was all grant, but anyway, gay FEMA. I'm just curious as to, and I was hoping Dar would stay, but why on some of these items on the wastewater, the branch channel improvements, why there was such a big difference? Like on item one, one vendor was $26,000 while the other one was $5,200. On line nine, for apparently the same project part, one was $7,500 while the other one was $32,000. Is there any?
So the way the bidding process works is we put essentially a project description together and explain in writing what we're looking for from the contractor. And then it's up to the contractors to identify how much it will cost them to do the work that we're proposing.
Okay.
So it's really hard for us to stand here and say, or explain to you why there's that kind of a difference, because it's really up to the contractor to determine within their organization, you know, how much it's going to cost, what it's going to cost to purchase the materials, and then they put the bid proposal together. So what Darrell did was he broke out like the primary work, and then he also had alternate work bid out, and he got pricing for both. So
is it generally general practice for them to do an all on-site estimate? Or do they do this all by just the word that you give them? I mean, they have to come out and measure and things, right?
I think we have it in writing. They might come out and measure. I think they were on site.
We have a pre-construction meeting, and okay. Any questions are vetted and asked. And I can tell you for, just mobilization and demobilization, one is coming from between Cambridge and Easton, where the other one is coming from Liberty Town. So their disposal and mobilization is going to be much more, much less, as is indicated here, and then also the demolition and removal work. They're right here. They can dispose of it on their property, which is 5 miles down the road instead of 45 miles or 50 miles. I'm not sure how far away.
Okay.
But,
so,
right, okay.
But those are huge differences right there. Those two added together. $24,000 versus $61,000.
Yeah, it's kind of moot really now at this point, but I'm just, then if Goody Hill's right here in Liberty Town, why does it necessarily cost $32,000 to excavate when these other people are coming from, where did you say, Cambridge, and that's $7,500?
That maybe, I perhaps, I don't know.
Okay.
I want to stop. That one is, I'm not going to speculate on that.
It could possibly be they have different size equipment. It could possibly be in the bidding process. I do this sometimes, too, where you know somebody else is going to come in high, you come really low, and then you move your cost over to another bracket. It happens quite often that way.
We don't typically ask contractors to explain every item.
Okay. Yeah, I know. I'm just... Just
yeah,
curious. I mean,
they're good questions.
I mean, curious, really. Okay, and then moving on. I was curious as also, I'm just a curious fellow by nature. I had spoken to, had spoken, Mary and I had spoken before, and I'm curious if we have received the water testing results for Berlin Falls Park yet. I know Mr. I always mess up his name, and I apologize. Mr. Deutsch.
David Deutsch.
Yeah,
we've got some preliminary results from the scientists indicating that there's no microbiological. There is microbiological hazard identified. We're in the process of getting a report from her.
Okay.
I don't have the details. She just sent me like a one little sentence summary. So we're waiting for
it's looking good. Report. That's what that's it. Yeah.
No, I should exactly say that. No. We're looking for a little more specific report from her.
Okay. Thank so you.
Basically, that's pretty good news.
Yeah.
And we should be getting a little bit more information on buildings and things like that, right? Well, that's okay. What Mr. Deutsch is working on.
Yeah, yes. Let's get a structural engineering report back from DPW. There's some, the report raised some questions that didn't answer others, so please come back to them and ask them a little more information. And I've not heard specifically from EA regarding the geotechnical work they were doing in the funds. My understanding is they are getting close to finalizing the draft of that report, so I should have that shortly as
well. And hopefully sometime this summer. Is that reasonable?
And then this is really just for Ivy. I didn't get my hands up quick enough earlier in the thing here, but for the downtown event application policy, is it basically? And I might have missed this. Is it basically just first come first serve after we meet with them? Because it says we will notify you if you have been selected to present your event for approval by the mayor and council.
No, it's not first come, first serve. We're going to take all of them between July 1st and September 1st. After the deadline, then we will review all the events once they're submitted. So if you don't get first dibs if you submit your event July 1st.
Okay, so then I'll
call. That's why we're allowing a 3-month period so everyone can get their events, their ideas together, and anything that they need to figure out in that 3 months, and then they submit, and then we have a group staff will go over each event and decide which would be the best fit for the town.
Okay, thank you. And then, I mean, just one last thing: this is already passed, but since it's just starting and it's only from July to September 1, maybe should it be extended maybe to October 1?
Well, I take it.
I don't know.
But the other thing is, the number of events didn't happen overnight. They've been built up over time, and some events have faded away. Not many, mm-hmm. but a few have faded away. And there's not a lot of wiggle room for new events. So if someone, quite frankly, most of the people apply who approved last year, I'm not aware of us having any problem with any of them. We wouldn't kick somebody else out for the same date unless that somebody gives up a spot, basically. I think that's a fair assumption because right now they're successively being held, and what we're trying to do is make sure they're not either overlapping or a little bit too close together.
The policy is for new events.
The ones in there have to, of course, the ones that are there, I can't imagine them not getting their applications in right away because they've worked too hard.
Right, well, that's what I was just a little worried about, that tomorrow
we're going to... The chamber events, the events that historically happen in the town, those are all good to go. But like I said, every week someone comes in my office and says, I got this great idea, we're going to do this event.
Well, I was just worried that tomorrow, this was going to be out tomorrow, and everyone would scramble, and then...
But
if it's for new, then I apologize that I misunderstood.
3 months, too.
Well, and I think Ivy's done a good job of already giving the chamber and other organizations a heads up about the potential for the change. So I think we've read, it's good for them here.
Okay.
I appreciate your question.
Thanks.
Thank you for taking the time to ask questions. Yes. Does anyone else have any questions regarding anything? Do you have any questions of the press?
Yeah, what was the amount for the car technology contract? How much was that? Do you remember?
I don't think that it specifies a grand total for the year. It does specify the monthly breakdown.
Can you get the information to both of the press and anybody that also puts it? That would be fine. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Just right now, I couldn't even get a guess. It's whatever it was last year, but it would be nice to bring that back.
I cannot math right now.
All right. I understand. No, good question. Thank you. Any other question?
Okay.
Entertain a motion to adjourn.
I feel like it's the first time I've ever heard a challenge.
What's up, you go?
Google real quick and find out real quick.